Welcome to Farmscape Online. I'm Bruce Cochran. My guest is Dr. Jette Christensen, the manager of the Canada West Swine Health Intelligence Network. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Christensen.
Thank you very much, Bruce. I'm really happy to be here and provide a little update.
The Canada West Swine Health Intelligence Network has released the results of its clinical impression survey for the first quarter of 2020. First of all, a little bit of background. Who provides the information gathered through the clinical impression survey? From where does that information come? And what types of information is gathered?
The clinical impression survey has been one of the cornerstones of Christians since we started, and since the national system, similar to ours, started back in 2012. It is a tool, it's actually just a survey where practitioners in the region, we send out the questionnaire in that survey tool we have to them just around when the quarter ends, and they put in, to the best of their ability, their impression about the occurrence of clinical disease, so signs that they see in the farms and how frequent they are. We collect that information, we analyze it and pull it together, and then we look at trends in whether these diseases suddenly seem to cause more clinical problems in the farms, or they're stable or they decrease. So that's what we do. So we monitor the impression of the clinical disease that the practitioners have in the field.
How is the information collected through this quarterly survey gathered, and what options do survey participants have for submitting it?
Well, we generally just send out a link to a list of practitioners that we maintain, and then they just click on that link, they go directly to a web-based survey where they can answer the questions either through their mobile phones or on a computer, and then it's stored, and once enough reminders have been sent out so everybody has had a chance to answer, I just download the data and analyze the data and present it at the quarterly calls back to the practitioners and ask them, does this make sense to you? Does this reflect your clinical impression if we pull it together from all the respondents?
How strong has been the response to the clinical impression survey? How has the level of participation changed? And what are the factors there?
We were running into, in 2018, we were running into a little bit of survey fatigue. The practitioners just took quite some time and quite some reminders to answer. And I think one of the reasons was that the list of diseases that we asked for was growing and growing and growing. So we decided to collaborate with our practitioners to revamp the survey. So one, it would be easier for them to enter data. Two, the data that we collected through the survey would fit and be more useful for our Christian objective to monitor trends and provide benchmarks. And one big piece of information we were missing was that we could count the respondents, but we couldn't figure out how many practices they represented, and we couldn't figure out exactly how many producers, so what proportion of the swine sector they would give a clinical impression on. So in 2019, we put in a lot of effort to revamp the survey completely. And we got to the point in October 2019 that we could test the questionnaire, the new questionnaire, the new clinical impression survey, and we did that. We used it again in for the fourth quarter of 2019, so in January, and now we've used it for the third time. And we can see now that we have really improved our respondent rates. We can see that over those three quarters, more and more practices have been contributing their clinical impression. We can also see that more and more individual vets have been contributing data and their clinical impression. And most importantly, we can also see that the proportion of the premises with swine in the region that we have a clinical impression on through this survey is growing. And we are up now to about 60% of the region's commercial swine producers. And we compare the data with the PICTRACE, the number of farms that's registered in PICTRACE. And that's a huge improvement over the last clinical impression survey, that we can actually present this data. That lends us a lot more credibility, and we are constantly asked by the national and other organizations about what do you cover, what proportion of the industry or sector do you cover, and we can now answer that.
What have been the key improvements that were made to the survey?
One of the key improvements was that we've never been able to compare how frequent two syndromes are. So I'll just take two syndromes and explain from there. One syndrome that we work very much with is the digestive system. So anything to do with the stomach or the intestines is grouped into one syndrome. Another syndrome that we work with is the respiratory syndrome. So that would be nasal and airways and lungs and heart in another group. But we've never been able to answer the question whether the clinical impression is that the digestive or the respiratory syndrome is more frequent. With the new survey, we can do that. We actually do monitor nine different syndromes, and we can now order them. So it's kind of benchmarking that we've never been able to do this well before. And we now can see on the first three quarters where we have the new data that the digestive syndrome, which includes diarrhea as the most common disease, is the most frequent syndrome. Across the board, the practitioners actually agree that it's a common syndrome. Next is a group of three different syndromes, anything to do with legs, skeleton, muscles. We call that locomotory. The respiratory that I just talked about, and then systemic, which would be something that sort of affects the entire pig, different organ systems. Those three syndromes are sort of next, and they occur occasionally. Then we have four rare syndromes, anything to do with the skin, neurological syndrome, which is sort of paralysis and strange cycling movements of the legs. The other one is injury and welfare, so anything to do with broken legs and other injuries would fall into that. And then reproductive. So they are sort of rare. That's a clinical impression. And then finally, we have two very rare syndromes, and that is diseases that can only be diagnosed in the barn as a clinical disease. That would be ear necrosis or something like that, or the diseases that the pigs would be born with. We call that congenital. So this is the first time we can actually sort of look at them and compare them and see what is more frequent or what the impression of more frequent diseases are. And then the second thing we can do is actually we can drill down. So we can go, for instance, from the digestive system, where I said diarrhea was one of the most frequent diseases, and it seems to be one of the most frequent diseases across all the syndromes. So we are actually able to drill down and see how frequent do the practitioners think that four or five different pathogens or bacteria or viruses are in causing that diarrhea. So we can drill down that extra step. And in addition, we ask them what age groups would be affected. And that is pretty new data. We've never had that in such an organized format before. Of course, we only have those few quarters, so nothing unexpected has turned up yet, which is a good thing. That shows that we get the data that we were looking for.
Overall, how was the health status in the first quarter of 2020?
It's the first quarter where I've seen all diseases, all symptoms sort of returning to the baseline across the clinical impression surveys, across all the laboratory data that we collect in addition to the clinical impression. Everything seems to stabilize at normal. So everything was returning to sort of the baseline where we want to be and have been on average for the last number of years. So that's really good news. The other really good news we have is on the porcine epidemic diarrhea, which is a coronavirus. Not the coronavirus we are dealing with in humans, but another coronavirus. And in Alberta, where they had four cases last year, in 2019, those four cases are cleaned up and they have returned to presumptive negative. In Manitoba, where they had 82 cases last year, they are also very well underway to clean up the whole situation. They have 75 of these 82 that have returned to presumptive negative. There's only three that are positive still, and the remaining four is transitional, so on the way to presumptive. And that was the results based in April. And since then, there's additional farms that have moved through the cleaning procedure. So that is a remarkable and good effort put in from the western provinces. The veterinarians, the pork boards, the provincial governments, and not least the producers. So they are really to be congratulated on that. And seen in the light of what is happening in the first quarter elsewhere, we've heard from Ontario and Quebec that they have, both these provinces have new cases of PED. So PED is still in Canada. It has been cleaned up pretty well in the West, but we are not in a situation where there's no threat. There is still a threat of new cases of PED, and it comes from two places. It comes from any contact with high traffic areas and transport coming from the east from possibly infected farms. So you have to be careful there. The other threat that we have right now is that spring is the time where you spread your manure, and you have to be extra careful when you're spreading manure from farms that are previously infected with PED, because PED can stay in the manure for years. We don't know exactly how many years, but just make sure that you don't spread too many dust and aerosol particles when you spread manures, and try to make sure that farms have closed doors and so on and so forth. Do not drag manure into your barns on your boots and clothes. And finally, when it comes to the health status in the first quarter, practitioners bring forward comments in the clinical impression survey, but also on our calls. And this quarter, we discussed an unusual condition that we saw in weaned sows, and we've labeled that as purple sows.
Looking specifically at PED, what do producers need to be keeping in mind, and why?
They have to make sure that any contact with high traffic, high risk facilities, so that would be abattoirs, assembly yards, layover facilities for pigs that are transported long distance, and any connection to transport vehicles with these could be high risk for contaminating their farms again and spreading PED. So make sure that your biosecurity is appropriate for that. And the other one is the manure spread. Make sure that you take extra precautions when you're spreading possibly infected manure. So that would be manure from farms previously infected with PED.
What is purple sows, and what causes this condition?
Bruce, that is a very good question. We don't know exactly what purple sows is, and we especially don't know what causes purple sows. What we see is sows that have purple discoloring patches down along the legs and on the belly. And we had the one case that we discussed. This condition started right after weaning. It was generally first and second parity sows. And the condition resolved itself after about a week. Treatments, antibiotics have been tried. Don't know if that has any effect or does any good, but just topical treatment for sores if the rashes or red-colored patches turns into ulcers. So the case that we discussed was in a loose housing sow unit with about 3,000 sows, and they had approximately 30 weaned sows affected with these purple patches or rashes on the bellies and the legs. The sows seemed otherwise okay. They had normal appetite, and they recovered. In the piglets, there were no signs in this particular case. And there was some laboratory testing done to try and find out what the cause would be. But there's no definitive answer. There was no pathogens or bacteria or viruses found that could explain these purple patches or rashes. And there's also been some rumors, or we're not sure how accurate the information is, that there are rare cases of these purple cells from other farms. But we don't know how frequent this condition is, and we don't know if it has any effect on the production in the farms that are affected, or especially on the reproduction of these sows. So what we want to do is to try and get some more information on this purple sow. How frequent is it? And for that, we are trying a new tool in Christian. And the new tool is just an activity around new conditions or unusual signs or emerging diseases such as this. And we will reach out to producers and to veterinarians in the region and ask for their impression or experience with these unusual signs or new diseases, so we can get a better idea of how much attention we should use and put into investigating this more closely. So what we specifically have done this time around, we reach out, as I said, to veterinarians that receive our veterinary report, and we reach out to the producers who also are receiving our report. And in those reports, we ask them to help us and tell us if they've seen something that looks like these purple cells. And we do that through a link. So you just click on the link and you are asked just a few questions, and it takes 30 seconds to 60 seconds to answer those three basic questions. And that will help us understand a little better how frequent purple sows is, and if it's something that is extremely rare or where it's seen. Of course, the answers that you put in there are confidential and private, and the only thing we can do in terms of identifying who answered is we can link it to a province. Nothing further than that. So you can just go in, whether you've seen the disease or the condition purple sows or not, just click on the link and let us know.
Overall, what have been the main factors that appear to have contributed to the improved general health situation of swine?
I would like to know that too, but I see a couple of options. One option is that the general restrictions that are put in place for COVID-19 that have restricted people movement might also have helped reduce the contacts between herds and between barns and people outside. So that might have contributed. It might also be a situation, but that is very late in the first quarter, that producers are more reluctant to have practitioners visiting their farms, and so we get just a little underrepresentation of disease or the impression of disease. I'm not sure that's a good explanation, again, since the restrictions mainly came into effect in March. And then maybe the most likely explanation is that the health status has been exceptionally good in the last quarter.
what should producers be focusing on or thinking about moving forward?
It is important, just touching on the last question, that people with flu-like symptoms, whether it's from influenza or it's from COVID, they should never enter a barn. We've also had reports that cats can be infected with the virus that caused COVID. So you should avoid contact with cats that have been infected, if you know that. The two items that we talked about earlier is also abattoir, assembly yards, layover facilities, those high traffic, high risk facilities that are connected with transport. They continue to be a risk for PED and all other diseases. And finally, we have to be remembering that this is the spring, manure spreading, so previously infected PED barns, the manure from those is a possible route of introduction of PED to new farms this spring, and we hope to avoid that.
And is there anything you would like to add?
I want to thank you for the opportunity to give this interview, but I also want to thank all the practitioners and laboratories for contributing to Christian. And I'll just send a message to everybody: stay safe in this difficult situation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Bruce. And I'm happy to provide this little update.
Our guest has been Dr. Jette Christensen, the manager of the Canada West Swine Health Intelligence Network. For Farmscape Online, I'm Bruce Cochran.